with the town budgeting and the capital improvements and other things in the town, that it seemed like every time there was a supposed need in town for something, regardless of the cost, that it was approved. I'm learning, and I have a lot to learn, and I've learned a lot since I've taken this position, that there's a lot more to being a selectman than people think. As a selectman, you have to sit on 7 different committees, and you have to monitor the business of the town. So you're involved with all departments, and there really is, I mean, a couple of 100 pages biweekly of information that you have to decipher and understand to go to your meetings. And there's a lot more that people don't see that never makes it in front of the voters. Mm-hmm. That if people understood a little bit more about how much is actually tried to get accomplished in town and how much we actually accomplish, they would find out that we do really weigh the cost of things more than people would think. So that's one reason why. And another reason why is because Wolfboro has been really, really, and everybody says it's so cliched. My kids have had a great, great experience growing up here. My wife and I love the town. My wife and I are going to be here for the rest of our lives. There's no reason for us to go anywhere else. So it's time to give back when you get to a certain point in your life where you can give back to the community. And that's what I planned on doing.
Was there a point early in your select board career where you said to yourself, "Self, have I bitten off more than I can chew here?"
No, I don't think so.
Oh, good.
I'm a quick learner, and I don't mind doing lots of research into subjects, and I don't mind digging in my heels when I think that I need to make a stand. My wife did say to me, she goes, "Hon, what if you win?" And I said, "Well, then I'm going to have to work hard, aren't I? I'm going to have to get myself up to speed, and I'm going to do my job."
I did not until 5 minutes before airtime. You handed me kind of an outline of what's been going on the last month or so. And I'm looking at all of these different subjects and things and meetings and meetings at 8 in the morning and at 6:30 in the evening. And you know, of course, you've got your own, you know, job to deal with. It's quite a time commitment.
Yeah, and every selectman does the same thing. I can't sit on all the committees.
Right.
I'm going to guess 25 different committees in town, and so you're either the principal or an alternate on 7 different committees. So there's 2 selectmen at most of the different organizations. And so it's anything from talking about I sat in on a meeting, even though I wasn't part of it, the task force for the 4th of July parade. I sat in on, or I'm part of the Economic Development Committee. And so there's lots and lots of different things that are discussed. We're discussing the Libby Museum. We're discussing repairs to Abernathy. The docks are being repaired, and we're going to be going into another phase next year, finishing the docks. There is an immense amount of information that goes through the selectmen and through all the different committees. I'm sitting on an energy committee, which I find fascinating because we're looking at installing electric vehicle chargers in downtown on the municipal lot. So everybody's like, "Oh yeah, so you call somebody, you get some chargers installed." Well, first of all, you have to appropriate money. The money has to come through warrant articles, has to come through the townspeople, has to be approval. You have to have a budget. And then when you dip into it, you can, depending on how you want chargers to work, what you want them to do, you can spend several thousand dollars to $300,000.
On a charger?
On either 2 or 4 or multiple chargers for EVs. So it ends up becoming that there's a whole subcommittee on the energy committee. So I sit on the energy committee and the subcommittee so that we can see if we can get some chargers in town for electric vehicles, because it is the future. It is what's going to happen. We are going to have more and more electric vehicles come to the town, and they need a place to refuel.
Does that tie in with the donated Tesla I keep hearing about?
No, the donated Tesla is, and this is, again, we are on, in Wolfboro, we're on the forefront. We're one of three towns, I believe, in New Hampshire that has an electric municipal vehicle. I'm glad that it's being used the way it is. It's going to be the captain's car, and not a full patrol car until we make sure that it works as it's intended. But they're going to have their own level two charger. There's level one, level two, level three chargers. And they're going to have a level two charger that's going to be installed at the safety building so that they can charge that car. A level two charger will charge a car up full in 7 to 10 hours overnight.
Okay.
And a car like that, Tesla, will go 200 to 250 miles in between charges. Driving it around town, you know, they might only have to plug it in every fifth day. But there are problems, well, not problems, but concerns when it's really cold and you're running the heat a lot and the car is sitting idle with the heat on, you're depleting the battery more than you would the gasoline from a gas-powered motor that's right. Idling. So there are some things. But I'm excited to see it. I'm looking at getting an electric car for myself too. So yeah, so this falls into my wheelhouse and I like it.
Who is behind the donations?
It is an anonymous donor.
Ah, okay.
And
it's not public.
Nope. They went to the police commission and asked them if the chair of the police commission, Mr. Woods, and they asked him if they could donate the car. And I think it's $66,000 fitted out as a police car with a charger. So a very generous donation, and whoever they are, thank you very, very much.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. I hear some things about the July 4th parade, too.
Yes. Been very contentious. There's been a task force that has a lot of qualified people, two selectmen, the police chief, the fire chief, members of the American Legion, who, by the way, people don't realize, they are the parade.
That's true. It's, you know.
It is not a Wolfboro parade. Right. The American Legion is the one that organizes, staffs, coordinates, and puts on that parade for us for years. They have. Thank you very much for them doing it for us. The task force has had a very, very difficult time with this because in my opinion, from talking to people, there are many, many people that want a parade, and there are as many, many people that are afraid that it's going to cause a health issue in the town. Right now, where we stand is seeing where more people are getting vaccinated and the case count has stabilized and is now declining in New Hampshire. The American Legion set up a set of criteria. They said that by parade time, if 70% of the population of New Hampshire, as well as neighboring New England states and New York, have received at least one vaccination dosage against the coronavirus, if hospitalizations per 100,000 population show a steady decrease for the preceding 2 weeks before the decision cutoff, if the coronavirus infection per 100,000 population demonstrate a steady decrease over the 2 weeks prior to our decision cutoff, which is, I believe, June 21st, if the variants are contained by the vaccines. Oh, and they actually have the cutoff date as the 18th of June. I thought it was the 21st. It might be the 18th.
Okay.
So
it's not dead yet.
It's not dead yet. The selectmen have to approve the permit for the parade, which hasn't been approved yet, because we've been waiting to see what the environment's going to have. Mm-hmm. So if the selectmen approve the parade, and by the 18th, we can meet these criteria. Right. And these criteria, by the way, were set in place by the American Legion because who do you think holds the moral responsibility?
Well, they do. It's their parade.
Absolutely.
By the way, those sound a lot like the CDC guidelines.
I don't know if they're exactly
I don't know if they're exact either, yeah. But they do sound familiar.
But I do know that the person who from the American Legion who is helping coordinate the parade this year is also a doctor.
Okay.
Is that for us?
No. Unfortunately not.
Oh, so is also a doctor. Mm-hmm. So he is following best practices. And it's, of course, it's the police chief's and the fire chief's job to keep us safe.
Right.
You know, if you wanted to do something that was legal but potentially harmful to yourself, the police chief would be concerned about anything that
right.
you do.
Right.
So they have a moral responsibility to the people in the town also.
You know, and as you sit here, as we talk about it, what's going through my head is, well, you wouldn't think it would be that complicated, but it is.
Oh, I had ideas. A lot of people have had ideas of stretching the parade, of putting less walkers in it so that you can move it along quicker. I suggested that to the police chief that we try and thin out the crowd in downtown, which...
Good luck with that.
Yes, that's what he said. That's what he said. He said it's a great idea if you could get 100% cooperation. He goes, but remember, we have 12,000 to 15,000 people that come from out of town for 3 to 4 hours to watch our parade.
Right.
And this is why they say people from neighboring states, because those are the people that are going to be here on the 4th of July. So they are strict guidelines. However, I believe that everybody has it in their heart that they want to have a parade in town if we can, mm-hmm. if we can do it safely.
It is 12:15. You're listening to Eric Scott here in WASR. My guest today, Brian DeShays, a Wolfboro select person, I guess is the correct word, right?
Yeah.
Select person. You know, I want to make sure we don't, you know, we include everybody.
Yes.
What are some of the biggest, thorniest problems that are facing Wolfboro right now?
We have a couple of large capital improvements in front of us. And a lot of times people will see them in the newspaper, in small articles or op-eds, or if they get on and watch the meetings on the public television, You can see them, or you can go to all the different town websites and see what they are. I'm trying to work with the town so that we can get one more streamlined page on the website. There's a general consensus that the website needs work, but again, it's money.
Right.
Right now, we have a part-time person who does that. Do we need a full-time person? And how much extra can we spend? Right now, some of the things we have coming in front of us are the Popwellan Ice Arena.
Yes, I've heard about that on our
sports
show.
We have no insulation. We have leaky roof. We've been talking about new bathrooms and locker rooms for years, and it's getting to the point where it really does need some repair. We did the town already approved a fund to do a complete examination of the building, soup to nuts, electrical, plumbing, structure, everything, to find out what the building needs exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going forward. We have the Libby Museum. And the Libby Museum is an old building in need of lots of repairs. And they have a chance to receive a large donation of taxidermy animals from North America. They want to open for longer periods of time, but they're looking at a budget of $3 million to get the Libby Museum up to snuff, of which the taxpayers would have to pay almost $1 million of it. So that's a very interesting situation. And there's kind of a conundrum right now because they want the town to commit so that they can get large donors to commit.
Mm-hmm.
But the town is afraid to commit in case the large donors don't come forward. Then we're asking taxpayers for money. Let's call them citizens. They're not just taxpayers. They're citizens. And we're asking them to in good faith, come up with $900,000so that hopefully the Friends of the Libby do what they say they're going to do. And nothing's guaranteed.
Right.
You look at the economic environment we're in right now. So that's another one. But our biggest nut to crack is a safety building. Okay. And what it looks like is there's not enough room on the existing structure, so we're going to end up splitting our safety building into a fire station and a police station. I believe the fire station is the one that's going to stay where it is, and the police station will be moving to a new location.
Okay.
I would have to check my notes. But this is going to be very, very expensive.
Well, building a new building usually is.
Yep. And we are to the point where it is used up its life expectancy. And with our population increasing as a whole and increasing during the summer, we need the services for the people. So that's going to be the next one. They already did the town hall. They did the high school. They did the library. That's the next big one coming down the road.
Do people come up to you when they have a problem, like some people call their senators or their congresspeople, and they say, look, I'm having a problem, or, you know, I'm really teed off by whatever? Do you get, is there a constituent service part of what you do?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I actually put on the town website my town email, my personal email, and my cell phone number. Because Why shouldn't people be able to call me with their concerns? And one that has rung a little bit to me is people are concerned about short-term rentals.
That was my next question.
Meaning Airbnb, and you don't want to say Airbnb because that's a company.
Right, because there are many others.
There are nine in the U.S. There are three primarily in our geographic region. I've done a little research on these. Airbnb itself does require people who rent their properties through them to pay the New Hampshire Meals and Room Tax.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to the state, and we get about 40% back of it to the town. At least that's the way it's supposed to work.
Right, as a handling charge.
Correct. Right. The others, Home to Go and some of the others, don't require that of their the people using their services. Now, what can happen, though, is someone can use Airbnb and get a clientele built up and then stop using Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
So then again, it's a very slippery slope. People have been renting houses, cottages, and camps along the water around this lake for 100 years,
and then some. Yeah.
And then some. I can remember my first days up here when I was a little boy. My grandfather would rent a house on Dockham Shores Road in Guilford for the summer. And we would spend the summer up there. And the family did it because they just needed the income. And so a lot of the small homes along the water have been in families for generations. And though it looks like a small home to us, the taxes can be $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on those properties. And if you're a third generation owner, and I know some that two school teachers, well, that's a big chunk of change to keep the family camp in the family, to pay $15,000 or $18,000 a year in taxes. So they rent. So there are people that need to do that. But the Conways had a real tough problem with it, where there were so many short-term rentals in family neighborhoods that houses became revolving doors. And they just, I believe, I don't know if it's a zoning ordinance or a town ordinance that they just put through that says no more short-term rentals in Conway.
Right. In fact, I heard about that on the news here at WASR.
Yeah.
When I first moved here in 1992, I had a condo in Weirs Beach. And most of the building was timeshare. Mine was a rental. And so if I didn't like the neighbors, they'd be gone in a week. Didn't bother me.
Yep.
You know, and people, they'd come in on Sunday and they'd leave on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I never had a problem with it. You know, it's like, all right, every so often you get one, they make a little noise. You go over, you know, say, hey, look, you know, you guys are making a lot of noise. Okay. I never really had any trouble with
no,
that. And that was long before the Airbnb era.
There are mechanisms in place. If somebody is disturbing the peace,
right,
you can call the police.
Right.
If there's some kind of issue going on, you can call the owner of the property. Maybe they'd be grateful because they don't know that there's 14 people at the house when there's supposed to be six. And I understand that. If you have a private association, you do have a mechanism to change your bylaws and limit rentals. There are a lot of associations in town that say no short-term rentals. You have to have at least a six-year lease or something that to that effect. So we want people to be able to use their property as they want to use their property.
Right.
But you also want to make sure that a family neighborhood keeps its character. Meaning, this is related but unrelated. I know that there was a road that backed up to Sewell Woods. And when the pandemic started, people were finding that people were lining their cars up 5, 6, 7 deep on a street to walk through the woods to get into Sewell Woods. And there were families with children there, and they were a little bit leery because they were having a lot of traffic and people that usually aren't on their road.
Mm-hmm.
And they were concerned about the safety of their children. There were a lot of children in that area that played out in the street, played in the road, and there were a lot of strangers around. And so I can see where, there might be solutions. Maybe outside of the commercial district in Wolfboro, we have it so that short-term rentals have to be a minimum of 6 nights. Maybe that will help, so there won't be as many weekend rentals, so there won't be quite as much turnover. But it is something. It's going to be something that's going to have to be addressed going further down the road. But right now, my big concern is if someone is using a service, they should be paying the same room and meals tax that the inns have to pay and that established real bed and breakfasts
right.
have to pay. They should be under the same regulations. They shouldn't be skirting the system.
Now, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, I know in some states we don't have a sales tax, so it's irrelevant.
Yep.
But if you live in a state with a sales tax and you buy something from out of state, technically you owe the sales tax on that item, whether you've paid the vendor for it or not.
Correct.
So if you have a short-term rental here, you're liable for the tax whether your intermediary company collects it or not. So to me it looks more of an enforcement issue.
Correct.
The problem is, how do you enforce it?
That's the problem. And I've talked to our code enforcement officer and our new planner, and that's the same thing. They said they did over 900 inspections our code enforcement officer did last year. You know, so now we have to have him go around to everybody who may be doing an Airbnb and find out, are you knock on their door, are you paying your taxes? Are you paying your room and meals tax?
I don't think I like the optics of that.
No, it doesn't work.
Right.
So it is something that, and I've called a couple of these companies and asked them, why don't you do like Airbnb does? Why don't you require the room and meals tax, and they say, well, that's up to the person, that's up to our client to do on their own.
It is 12:28. Thank you very much for listening. I know you had mentioned 12:30. Can you stick around?
I can stick a little bit longer.
Okay, I appreciate that. Okay. If you have a question for Mr. Deshaies, 569-5253. That's 569-LAKE, by the way.
Oh, Lake, that's good.
Yeah, it kind of works out that way. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about parking meters in downtown Wolfboro. and I know that's one of those really almost third rail kind of topics. And I'm not, you know, I understand I can understand both arguments for them and against them. Yep. The biggest argument against them is, of course, you need to set up a whole support system, you know, so how much money are you actually going to get? But on top of that, you know, it's to keep the spaces turned over as well.
Mm-hmm. I remember we used to have people that used to walk and write tickets.
Right.
I haven't seen, maybe they're there still and they just are more discreet about it, but I haven't seen it as much in the past. I had somebody say to me, you'll see parking meters when you see streetlights. I had another person.
That'll pay for the streetlights.
I had another, rest her soul, a dear friend of mine who passed, and I went up to her when they were starting to build the high school. And I said, okay, instead of putting the new high school, where the high school is and renovating it, why don't we put the new high school where they're putting the art center?
Okay.
And then knock down the old high school and put the fields there. Because it's actually probably less money to demolish a building and get rid of it than to completely rehab it.
Right.
And she said, you will never get that to happen. Don't even bother talking to anybody. And I said, why? And they said, do you know how many people fought for so long to get that high school building built? And she said, and I was the first graduating class from it. She said, that building will never move.
Okay, then.
So that's the idea of parking meters and streetlights. You have people that, old New Englanders, they're set in their ways, and they like things to kind of stay the way they stay. Maybe we can take and we can go, and just a suggestion, go to the parking space. And instead of issuing tickets, issue warnings.
Right, for a while, as people kind of
I'm sure with systems nowadays they can take and they can they do with your speeding tickets. If they give you a warning for a speeding ticket,
right,
they now know that they've given you a warning,
right.
And if they catch you twice, then right, they're going to go, wait a minute, you had a warning already. So maybe the same thing can happen with the tickets. You can, if you find a repeat offender, then they get a parking ticket.
Makes sense.
Again, it's we try to be very accommodating to our tourists. Our tourists create a nice character for our town.
Sure.
They make it a destination place, a place people like to come and to visit. Do you know that Wolfboro, Thrillist? I don't know if it's a magazine. You can't tell anymore nowadays.
I've heard of it.
Thrillist is on the internet.
A digital magazine.
It's a digital magazine. Yeah. And they just rated Wolfboro one of the 20 best lakeside cities in the United States.
I didn't know that, no, but I'll be looking that up this afternoon just to read it.
And I don't know how many lakes there are in the United States.
A lot.
But there are a lot. And there are a lot of towns around those lakes.
Yeah, sure.
And for us to be one of the 20 nicest or best lakeside cities to visit in the country is a feather in our cap again.
Yeah, especially because New Hampshire has so many lakes, you know, already.
Yep.
And there's already, I think, more lakeside towns than many
Meredith
other states.
Meredith and Center Harbor and
sure.
Guilford and Laconia.
And then you go up to Squam Lake and the Connecticut Lakes and all, you know.
And then the Thousand Lakes.
Yeah.
So we go back to, why did you want to be a selectman? Look at the place we live in.
Yeah.
My wife and I don't travel a lot. We haven't had the ability to. We raised two little kids, and then they did things in towns, and we did what we could do. And as we decided we were going to do a little more traveling, there was a pandemic. But even when we travel to other places, there's nothing like driving up South Main Street into town and then coming through town to go home. We go to all sorts of places in the world. And then when you come home, you look at the lake, you look at your mountains, you look at your town, and you go, what a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And we're very lucky to be here.
That's true. I always tell people the winter is the penance we pay to live here in the summer.
Oh, and the winters are not nearly like they used to be. They're shorter and busier.
They do seem to be that way.
Maybe I'm older, but they're shorter and they're busier. There's a lot more folks that spend a lot more time up here than used to.
But still, I am not an outdoor person, especially in the wintertime. So for me, it's what did Charlie Hossack call it on Mike and the Hoss? The season of yuck.
Yeah.
You know, and I said.
Well, just so you know, Charlie Hossack wears shorts all winter long, too.
Yes, I know
does. So I don't think the cold bothers him.
I've seen him come in with the shorts, and it's actually kind of funny. It's like, you know, it's 30 degrees outside, right? Okay. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about some of the other things going on here, if you have the time. We talked about the Tesla. Now there's another one for an electric mountain bike.
Yep. And everybody's teasing.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yes. They actually have electric mountain bikes, street bikes, electric motorcycles. You've seen the little balancing scooters that the kids drive around on now.
Mm-hmm.
Electric is becoming the way of the future. And the funny thing was, when my children were 5 and 6 years old, when my children were 5 and 6 years old, I actually bought them electric mini bikes.
Oh, yeah.
One of the first electric mini bike that came out, I bought them for them as we got them for them 1 year for a Christmas present. And so electric is going to be, all the car companies are now saying that by between 2030 and 2040, they're going to have primarily all of their vehicles electrified. Rivian is coming out with an electric SUV and an electric truck. They already have a contract to build, I believe, tens of thousands of electric vans, and they're already being delivered to Amazon.
Yeah, I did hear. In fact, I think that's in their TV commercial that they bought so many vans, electric vans, which I think is great.
So the electric mountain bike is going to make it so that an officer can get into tight places, get places quickly, maybe through traffic or other things like that. And by the time he gets to a location, he's not so tired that he can't do his job.
I never thought of that.
Yeah, and they're starting to use them around the country, especially in more warm climates. You can see how they would be fantastic along the beaches in Southern California and other places. But it is a good way for an officer to get to an emergency situation or to do a patrol where cars can't patrol down Bridge Falls Path and places like that much more easily. I think that's going to be interesting. I could see us maybe one or two more down the road.
My guest today, of course, Brian Deshays, a Wolfboro Select person and father of... I'm sorry?
The Beach.
The Beach.
That's the next one we need to talk about.
Okay, we're going to talk about The Beach. But and father of Brody Deshays, who is a state representative.
State representative.
And he did very well in his race, by the way. He was here when he was running. He was a nice guy, by the way.
Yep.
So tell me about The Beach.
Okay,
I know that the Brewster Beach will be partially open this year, which is nice.
Brewster Beach, there's been a little confusion because some people have said that the town is doing what they want and not following the citizens' request, but that's not true. The beach lot is town property.
Right.
So the town has the ability to do what they need to make that piece of property safe and usable for the community. So we have put signage along Clark Road, a town-owned road, that limits parking. We have we're installing trash receptacles for the beach area because there was complaints that there was lots of trash. There are going to be parking attendants. There's a possibility of cameras. The beach will be open to the public except for the last 2 weeks of the summer when Brewster is requesting that it be used only for their programs and their incoming students.
Right.
Now, do you understand how the beach works? The beach is owned.
Not entirely, no.
The beach is owned by Brewster.
Right.
They own the waterfront. We own the parking lot behind. So
okay.
The town leases the beach off of Brewster.
All right.
For a dollar or something like that. So Brewster does have the ability when they need to use the beach for their personal interests only. There's been concern that our other beaches that we've made private because there has been an influx of people just visiting for the day. Now, when people say Wolfboro residents only, they have to understand that it's more than just a person who lives in Wolfboro and pays taxes. It's if you are family staying with family up here or friends staying with family up here, you're allowed to use the beach.
So that's the equivalent of when I was growing up in the city, a visitor sticker for your car.
Correct. If you're staying at a bed and breakfast in town, like the Inn on North Main, or if you're staying at the cottages down on Center Street, you can use the beaches. The only people that it restricts are people who drive in for the day to use the beaches.
Okay.
And a lot of, and I think it was exacerbated last year because talking to the Lakes Region Conservation Trust, because my house abuts Sewell Woods, and just mentioning that there's been a lot more traffic through the woods and more trash on the ground and things like that. I call them and let them know when I see a tree down over a trail or something like that, because we walk all the trails and whatnot. And they said that all of their properties were inundated starting last spring, where people were using trails and things so much up by the Castle in the Clouds and other properties that the trails were getting decimated so that they would veer off and create new trails and then start causing environmental impacts and everything. The lake had more boaters on it last year than any year. Every marina sold out of every boat that they had. Now this year, from what I've been told, all the marinas requested as many boats as they could get. They're all sold out almost again this year, so people are lining up to get boats in 2023. So we're having just a huge influx of tourism. And I think that that caused more of an issue with the beach situation than anything last year. Now this is all my opinion. So we are taking these actions, and in end of June or July, I think it's going to be more like July, we're going to revisit what is happening with the beaches, get feedback through public sessions where the public's going to be invited, neighbors from all the areas of the beaches, and get input to see what we can do on the fly to change things to maybe alleviate problems that are occurring.
How do you keep people from driving up from the day to use the beaches?
Well, and that's the thing. We are going to have parking. I know that we will have a parking attendant at Brewster Beach. I assume we're going to have some kind of attendant at the other beaches. And you use a, I believe you can use your dump sticker or a beach pass.
Okay.
To go to the beaches.
Okay, so there'll be some kind of
I thought of maybe we can look at it in the summer and we can lenient it out a little bit. Maybe we can put a half dozen or 10 spots at each beach that say out of state parking or something like that, or non-resident parking or something to that effect. Maybe it won't be as crowded this year as it was.
I don't know.
That was a knock on wood.
Yeah, I know.
But it's something that we are going to have to revisit. There isn't a simple solution to just everything public, everything private. We're gonna use like everything a hybrid model, and we're gonna see if we can accommodate everybody.
Okay.
We have to. We're one of the 20 nicest lakefront towns in America.
Right.
In America, so we have to try and accommodate everybody.
Thrillist, you say?
Yeah, Thrillist.
Yeah, definitely one of what. Something else here that kind of caught my eye, Solarize Wolfboro.
Yep.
I like the sound of that. I've always been a big believer in solar power.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, now remember, this is the Energy Committee.
Right.
I've sat on one meeting.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly what Solarize's plans are. What they're trying to do is with the... the potential for a new infrastructure bill coming from the federal government, states will be getting grants.
Mm-hmm.
And then towns can apply for those state grants, and you will recoup a portion of the cost for installations of things. I believe they looked at it in the library, and it wasn't feasible. I've looked at it in my house, and... because I have a hill behind my house in Sewell Woods with lots of tall trees.
Yeah, probably not a great candidate.
Well, they told me 20 years for a break even, and then you'll have to update your system in 20 years. I'm still thinking that when I redo the back portion of my roof of my house, I'm going to do Tesla shingles on it and a battery backup. And even if I'm not making any money or saving much money, I'll be off the grid somewhat.
Right.
And my carbon footprint will be a little bit smaller. So they're looking at installing lighting on Bridge Falls Path, and we're going to try and do it so that it's aesthetic and so that it's not light polluting and so that it's very energy efficient. Okay. So you use a more yellow-colored LED bulb, and you can cut your expenses and have something that glows nice and doesn't cause as much light pollution.
Okay.
And we're looking at potentially that we want to use as much energy efficient strategies when we build the new safety building and the new, the new police department and the new fire department mm-hmm. buildings. The high school did very well with their geothermal field. It's done very well for keeping the cost of heating and cooling the building, which is much larger than it was,
right.
Much, much lower.
For those of us who didn't get the memo, geothermal? Fascinating.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
They have wells. I can't remember how many. It could be a couple of hundred wells that are underneath the fields,
mm-hmm.
the recreational fields. And what you use is you take and you use the heat from the water in the ground and then pump it back into the ground, and it creates a looped cycle, and you actually can extract heat from 45 degree water. Everything that's above absolute zero has a heat component
right.
and a cold component to it. When you get to absolute zero, then there's no heat component left. I use on my house, I use an air-to-air heat pump that was designed by a company like 12 years ago, and I can create $2 of heat for every $1 of electricity at 30 below zero.
Wow.
So the electric heat that baseboard that you see in your house,
mm-hmm.
that's for every $1 of electricity spent, you create about $1 worth of heat, a little bit under, like 96 cents worth of heat, because the electricity is generating, it's going directly and directly generating heat. Mine right. uses the latent heat in the air to create heat. So that's the way geothermal works. But you have to have a lot of criteria to meet that. You have to have a large enough plot of land. You have to have the right type of soils. And it is more expensive, so you have the break-even point that you have to. If I spend X number of dollars doing it, am I going to get a return in a short enough period of time?
Okay. Wow, that one's fascinating. You guys just had a meeting, was it last week?
The energy meeting?
No, a Board of Selectmen meeting.
Yes.
Or Select People meeting.
Yes.
What was going on with that? I know there's a whole bunch of things that were approved. The discussions, I know some, we talked about the Brewster Beach yep. signing and things like that.
Well, it seems like we are approving most of the permitted activities that have gone on in the past. Everybody knows that they have to follow COVID restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
The Mount Washington says it's coming again, as long as it can meet the COVID restrictions and it thinks that it's safe, it's going to be. It's in dry dock getting fixed right now. We do have at the town docks now, Winnie Wake, which is a family-owned company that takes people out to do water sports.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll be picking up and dropping off at the town docks. And we have a new company, Slappy Hour, which is a charter boat that will be coming by our docks. I believe they're out of Laconia or Guilford, and they're going to be coming by to drop off people to get ice creams, to go to dinner and whatnot, and picking up off of our docks.
Almost like a Winnipesaukee taxi.
Yes, kind of.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I got to try that.
Yeah.
I
don't know if it still exists, but you used to be able to take a sailboat out of Laconia and go for just sunset cruises with wine and cheese around, you know.
I remember hearing about that, but I never got a chance to do it.
Yeah, and they say that Sophie C. and the Dora C. are both operating again this year over in Laconia. So,
and an unsolicited plug, if you're looking for a lot of experience without spending a lot of money, that's where you go.
Yeah.
You know, it's the only mail boat left, I think, in
yep.
the country,
yep.
number one.
Yep.
And it's a great cruise for under $20.
Yep.
Absolutely fantastic way to spend the day.
So it looks like, and we approved the jet ski rental again. They were operating last year, and they said that they had some challenges last year because they were overloaded too, and they say that they're going to make sure that all their guests use their equipment appropriately and that everything goes smooth. So everybody's trying hard. Everybody's trying to get back to normalcy, and everybody's trying to do it safely. And that's all we can ask.
When you're dealing with an item, whatever it may be,
mm-hmm.
and you may feel very strongly about it, but the effect on the town is different, that's always a difficult place to be in. To have to either vote against your personal wishes or put the town first, even if you don't believe it's the right thing to do. Have you experienced that?
Well, I would say that I love the Wolfboro 4th of July parade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been sitting there since I can remember, and my kids have been there every year, no matter what was happening. We missed one year. We had to go to Gibraltar.
Oh.
And on the 4th of July, I was up on in a restaurant on top of the Rock of Gibraltar with a bunch of monkeys looking in the window. True story. So that was the only year that I've ever missed the 4th of July. We were with some British people, and they celebrated 4th of July for us by having a red, white, and blue cake and putting a couple American flags up. I was like, this doesn't make it. Where are the fireworks and the parade, guys? Come on. So anyways, I try, before I make a decision on something, and find out what the people of the town want. I really wish, and it would have maybe helped the task force a little bit, and I suggested that we do this more often. I know that it means another Warren article, and we had 34 Warren articles or 43 Warren articles last time. But I wish that the parade had gone out as an informational Warren article. Yes, you want a parade? No, you don't want a parade. I guess in March it would have been a little bit too early because there was kind of a different environment at that time than there is now. I think people are feeling a little bit safer now than they were then. But I would have liked to see what the average citizen in Wolfboro wanted. We did it with the beaches. You know, there was a Warren article for that. But for something that is close to people's hearts, that can be something that can be polarizing, I think we need to find out what the citizens want, and that it doesn't mean we have to do exactly what they want.
Right.
I mean, people don't always have, they have their own interests in heart, and that doesn't necessarily always create harmony for the town or the environment or wherever they are. We still with an informational Warren article like that, we still have the ability to choose what we think is the right path. But it's nice to know what the people in town want. When I was running as selectman, I was the only one I saw of all the selectmen that stood outside for hours and hours and hours in front of the post office, in front of the supermarkets, in downtown on the sidewalk, to just talk to people. And I asked them, what do you think about the town docks? What do you think about having a parade this year? What do you think about, you know, so that they have a voice. I think the people in the town need to have a voice, and a lot of times they don't know where to go with their voice.
Right.
The election comes, all of a sudden they see a bunch of articles, they read a page in the Granite State News that explains the articles in a minute detail, and then they vote.
Mm-hmm.
And only 1,300 of them vote. We need more people to vote, please, right. More people. We have to get more information to people's hands. I don't mind if people come up to me and ask me questions. And a lot of times I'll say, I don't know. And to me, it's okay
right,
not to
know. Which
is
fair, right?
I'll find out.
Right.
And I'll answer a call and I'll send back an email. And you're not going to wait a week. It's going to be a day or two. And if I can't find the answer, I'll email or call you back and say, I haven't figured it out yet, but I'm still working on it.
Okay.
I mean, nobody knows everything.
True. Have you, I'm not even sure really how to say it, when you're on the end of a select board vote,
mm-hmm.
and the vote, for instance, is 7-2 or whatever.
Yeah, there's five of us.
Five of us, so 3 yep. to 2, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the minority. Does that get frustrating occasionally?
No.
No, not at all?
No, and you know what? It doesn't happen all that often. Like I said, a lot of times things are filtered before they get to that final process.
Okay.
And everybody sees the final process and sees what it is and then says, well, look at, they voted for everything. Well, it's because there's been a lot of back work that people don't see
right.
to get to that point. When we're going to, an example, the electric charges, and I can use that one because I understand that one a lot. There are so many different choices that you can make that will charge your cars 10 miles in an hour, 30 miles worth of charge in an hour, or 200 miles worth of charge in 30 minutes. There's that much of a difference. And there's difference in costs of a unit costing $500 or $600 and a unit costing $150,000. So all this gets talked about and talked about and talked about. I personally have talked to about 10 different companies that sell, make, or install chargers. And so have two other people on the energy committee. And it's going to be discussed for meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting before we take it down to one or two possibilities. And that's what the people in town don't get to see.
Stupid question. You know when you charge a car and you put you plug the little thing in?
Yep.
Is that a standard connector?
There is there are three kind of connectors. Tesla has a proprietary connector. There's a CHAdeMO connector, which was used by Nissan and Asia, and then there's the J1772 or the CCS charge plugs. Tesla has adapters, and they can use anything. They're the originator. I'm looking at buying a VW. My VW will use the J1772 or the CCS plug.
Okay.
Now, there are public chargers where you just plug in and it's free. Some municipalities just offer those. Those are becoming farther and fewer in between, and they're at a much lower charging rate. Now, a lot of the chargers, you plug in and you charge anywhere from 23 cents to 80 cents a kilowatt. Now, I've looked at it that at about 24 cents a kilowatt, you're still saving half over gasoline. At 40 cents a kilowatt, you're still saving under gasoline. But some charging companies charge you more than that. There are places that are host sites, so they'll install, these companies will install the chargers free, but they get all the payment.
Right.
They will pay the person for the cost, the exact cost of the electricity, and they get all the royalty above because they've set the standard where they want it to, they want 40 cents a kilowatt, 50 cents a kilowatt, they can do whatever they want. You can pay by an app, you can pay by a charge card, just using your credit card. There's a lot of different ways. It's going to become more standardized as the EV world matures. Right now, 80% of people charge their cars in their garage with their own charger.
Oh, I figured it had to be because I don't see that many, you know, chargers out in the real
world. That's amazing. There's PlugShare, there's three or four different apps, and you can look them up, and you can go on line, and you can see a map of the chargers, and you would be surprised how many chargers are installed up and down the 93 and the 95 corridor already. In New Hampshire, we are behind a lot of states like Massachusetts, New York, California.
Oh, that's why I haven't traveled in a while.
Yeah.
So.
I could get from Wolfboro to Santa Barbara, California, following main highways and find chargers all the way along the route.
That's great. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Okay. Brian DeShays, ladies and gentlemen, Wolfboro Select Person. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you, Eric.
If you missed part of the show, you can always catch it on our website, WASR.net. Click on podcast, and you'll be able to see it. 101 is the time.